Hello and welcome to the Flight Free podcast, the place for uplifting stories, grounded adventures, and enlightening reasons why not to fly. For the next 25 minutes, we hope to inspire, inform, and entertain. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride.
Hi, welcome to the Flight Free podcast. I'm Maggie.
I'm Anna.
Some eagle-eared listeners might have noticed that this month's podcast was supposed to be about nature and the pandemic, but that's been delayed by the pandemic. So we'll be doing that next month instead.
So this month, we're showcasing the UK as a destination. International travel is pretty difficult right now, but why look anywhere else when there are so many fantastic parts of the UK to explore? And we're going to be speaking to Kat from Byway Travel about some of the wonderful places in the UK.
Time for the Flight Free Fact.
Flight Free Fact.
So what do you think is the country most visited by British people going on holiday? Anna,
Yeah, it's Spain, isn't it?
No, actually, it's the UK. In 2019, UK residents took 123 million domestic overnight trips in the UK, only 93 million overseas. And according to the ONS, in 2019, the number of people holidaying in the UK is 60 million. And that's about the same as the number who go on holiday in every other country in the world put together.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Yeah, I had no idea that the UK was the top destination for UK travellers, but maybe that does make sense.
And another flight-free fact, UK residents spend more abroad than you foreign visitors do here. UK residents spent $62 billion on visits overseas in 2019. Overseas residents spent only $28 billion on visits to the UK.
Okay, so this is a great moment to bring in Kat. So we're welcoming Kat Jones from Byway this month. Byway is a travel agency set up in the middle of the pandemic. Sounds like a mad time to be setting up a travel outfit, but it's about planning people's flight-free holidays, and all the journeys are 100% flight-free. So Kat, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Do you want to give us a bit of background to you, so who you are and why you set up Byway.
Sure. So hi everyone, I'm Kat. I am the founder of Byway, set up Byway, as Anna says, in the middle of the pandemic, right actually at the beginning of the pandemic. I think Boris's announcement that we were going into our first lockdown was the catalyst for me to get on and incorporate a company and start to build this out. We're about flight-free holidays, but we're also about the joys that come with the holiday of traveling through that are more exciting than flying over, and the things that you miss when you go right over hundreds of miles above them and you're going through and you're stopping off and you're experiencing things as part of the journey as well as the destination. So I'm very much a slow travel company as well as a flight free company. For me, I've always been a slow traveller. I've never owned a car. I've always had family holidays by train and boat and bike and loved it, but not loved the organising of it and the planning of it. The level of research that you have to do and the time that you have to construct a trip that is genuinely enjoyable and interesting and kind of tailored to what you want to do is hard enough. And then once you've got that idea of your perfect trip, there's a whole nother level of hard, which is getting under the skin of the timetabling, and how does that ferry come into this place? And if I'm stopping at that port, do I just wait at the port for 40 minutes, or is there something that I'd actually like to do at that point? And if I'm going to be waiting here for 3 hours, then should I drop my bag? And is there a wonderful walk? And all of that kind of syncing up of timetables, taking advantage of these times so that they're not seen as waiting time, but as holiday time, that is just really, really difficult to do. So that was really the vision with Byway, is but there are a huge number of people for whom the idea and the romanticism and attraction of traveling that way and the flight-free nature and the low-carbon nature of this kind of travel is really attractive and something they'd love to do if it was easy, but can't do when it's not easy.
I think you've really found a gap in the market there, because yeah, we speak to lots of people who want to be flight-free, but then the practicalities of it are often quite difficult. So do you have let's say, two top itineraries for travel within the UK that maybe they're your most popular or ones that you particularly think are brilliant?
Yeah, definitely. So as a brand, we do slow travel routes outside of the UK and in the UK. We have some routes down into France and Italy, but obviously right now, none of that is going anywhere. So we've lots of people booked in and just deferring their trips and waiting and on waiting lists to say, tell me when I can go. And so all of the trips that we're running right now, we've got customers away all the time. And they're all away in the UK. And the two top trips at the moment for us and our customers are the Scottish, west of Scotland, Scottish Highlands and Islands. So various different routes will kind of pull out different stops and stays according to the preferences of the people that are planning. But essentially that kind of area around Marl and Iona and Staffer and Loch Lomond and the Trossachs, and then up to the Skye and some of the small isles around there, Fort William and Harry Potter trains, all of that sort of exploration. And we've got some people away right now who are going right up past Inverness and up to Orkney as well. So there's sort of whole worlds of extension and detours around that, but that's a really popular region for us at the moment. And then the other that's been very popular this summer has been Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly. We focus very much on the west of Cornwall and some of the walks that there are, and some of the amazing open top buses as well, so that there's quite a lot of freedom to explore by bus, and really nice buses as well in that area, and then kind of pilgrimage way and various walking routes that are just old and historic and lovely. But then also the extension out to the Isles of Scilly on the ferry. It's very common to fly to the Isles of Scilly, and there's no reason that it should be. And there's actually a great night train as well. So if all you want to do is go to the Isles of Scilly, then you can get on a night train to Cornwall and then out on a ferry and you're there. And we actually had some people there last week, I think, and there was low-lying cloud. So we sort of booked our travellers onto the ferry from day one, and they were going in and out of Scilly and having a lovely time. And then we had a whole load of grumpy people who'd had their flights cancelled, who had to cram onto the ferry and couldn't get a seat. And our customers were going, oh, we're very relaxed, lots of leg room and reading the newspaper. And that was quite fun.
Brilliant.
So Kat, what are your favourite things about travelling around the UK?
Oh, goodness. I think, gosh, there are so many things I love about travelling around the UK. I guess the ease of travelling without a car, like, it's maybe counterintuitive for lots of people, but so my family holiday is to the Jurassic Coast, and it's actually one of the trips that we're also booking quite a lot of on the site, because I've just written it down. But it's essentially hop on a train at Waterloo and whiz down to Bournemouth and then get off. And I actually carry my bike on the train, and, you know, you can easily get your bike on a train and then you can hop off at Bournemouth and go for a little paddle and cycle along the seafront and over a chain ferry and out into the Studland Peninsula. And it's just works. And then there are buses you can hop onto and hop off, and the sort of ticketing infrastructure as well, where you have a rail card and you can buy a flexible ticket. It's kind of set up in the UK to actually be really flexible and to be able to take advantage of, hey, that looks like a really nice place coming up, I'm going to hop off and I'm going to have a walk. And that just works. And you just get on the next train 2 hours later. So I think there's a lot to love about the way that the infrastructure works. And I think the ability to think about your holiday as one that doesn't have to be relying on excellent weather all the time, you know, like, I think that there's a certain element of, if you're planning to go abroad somewhere really hot, then it has to be really hot or the holiday just doesn't work. Whereas in the UK, you have a whole range of experiences that you can bring together to say, well, that's actually an amazing walk regardless of the weather. This is something, if the sun was really shining, you'd kind of plan this in. But there's a really lovely pub here where you can go in and have a, you know, cozy experience. So I think there's a diversity of experience here that allows us to just do a whole range of stuff really easily in a small region.
I wanted to go on to, is there anything that's not so good about traveling in the UK compared with other countries? Anything that you wish was different?
Yeah, I guess that's the flip side of what I just said, I suppose, which is that really it works, and really it's very flexible, and there are great options for being quite free with your transport and getting around. But the downside is it is just a nightmare to find out how that would be true, you know, and to actually, like, to access that information is really, really difficult. That's maybe the bugbear, is it's actually very, it's hard, especially once you get off the beaten track. It's just hard to know what's what, where is there, because people aren't writing about it as much and people aren't surfacing it as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it true that holidaying in the UK is more expensive than holidaying abroad?
I mean, it's certainly you can spend as much as you want on a holiday, can't you? So I guess it doesn't have to be. Obviously, if you're staying closer to home, then that immediately brings the price down because you're not going a long way.
Yeah.
But I think the point is also you can go a long way in the UK, you know, and that's where we use the sleeper train a lot to get up to Scotland. So where there are some really lovely ways of doing that journey in the daytime and stopping here and stopping there, mm-hmm. and having an overnight here and taking your time over it, especially for people. We do quite a lot of long weekends, you know, four days around the Isle of Mull. And that's something that's perfectly possible from London because you get the sleeper up, you get the sleeper home, and you're pretty much there and you've got your 4 days to explore. Mm. But then in that case, the sleeper train is not inexpensive. And you think of the sleeper train as being more like a night's accommodation,
yes.
as opposed yes. to like a train. When you think of it as it's a train and a night's accommodation all rolled into one, then it's a blooming bargain. So I think it depends how you think about kind of configuring the trip. And the other thing I think that's really worth doing for holidaying in the UK is make sure you have a rail card, because it makes a huge difference to the price of the travel.
So we've already mentioned Isles of Scilly, Cornwall, Jurassic Coast. Now these seem to be places that are quite popular already. And it reminds me of those pictures we saw in the first lockdown where crowds and crowds of people were gathering at Durdle Door and that kind of thing. So what might happen here if we do start to fly less and holiday abroad less and therefore holiday here more? What does that mean in terms of the amount of space there is? You know, are we going to be suffering from over tourism? What might happen there?
Yeah, so I think the core point there is that there is so much here in the UK that doesn't see loads of tourists. And there are so many people who would be really delighted to have more tourism in their local economy, right? And so this is one of the things that we need to watch out for. And it's actually one of the areas that we focus with our routes and with our technology is surfacing those places in regions that may themselves be very popular. If you're going to the Jurassic Coast, for example, one of my favourite personal places, which is actually a beach that my grandparents met on, is South Beach in Stubland, which is not a particularly crowded beach. You know, it's gorgeous. It's got a local cafe, Joe's Cafe, which has been in the family for generations, and they've got a beach hut that's just full of buckets and spades, and you help yourself by a coffee from the cafe, and it's lovely. But you wouldn't know if you were going to that area. You'd go to Bournemouth Beach or Swanage Beach. So I think that's a lot of what we're doing, is we've gone quite carefully into regions that we know very well, where we can take you off the beaten track, and we can tell you, yeah, even if you go to Cornwall with us, we're not sending you into the middle of all the crowds. We're telling you where are the places that you can get to where actually not many people go there. So I think that as we see more of a shift in, you know, sustainability consciousness and decision making around holidays and starting to have people actually really excited to explore areas that they'd never have, if they'd come to the UK as a tourist, they'd have done all these things, but they never have because they've just always lived here. So if you have more people interested to explore this way, there need to be more companies that are helping people explore this way, where the focus is in helping explore off the beaten path. And actually, especially in terms of COVID recovery, that's only a good thing for whole areas of the UK and people running B&Bs and all of this, who actually could really do with a little bit more of a catalyst for recovery. So I think there's a lot of responsibility in the industry there.
That kind of feeds into the difference between the off the beaten track and cities, because our cities can very well absorb lots of tourists.
One year when I was worried that I wasn't going to be able to find accommodation, I think I was booking late, and I thought, why don't we go to the City of London? Because it has to be in August, and in August the City of London is empty, so we booked an apartment there, and we had a really lovely holiday doing all the touristy things in London and also visiting lots of friends who were based near London. And they're wonderful public transport, wonderful public services. It's actually a very sustainable way to have a holiday in the UK.
And I think that seasonality piece is really interesting as well, thinking about, you know, when we're selling trips in Cornwall and the Scilly Isles, like, we're not actually selling them in August. We're selling them in September and June as well, where there is a little bit more space. And actually, a lot of our August trips are around the Yorkshire Moors and the Yorkshire Dales and some of these places that you might not think actually but are beautiful in August, and out towards the coast as well, you know. So I think that that's part of what we're doing as well, and what I'd encourage people to do also is thinking about, like, this varies a lot by season. Like everywhere's quiet sometimes.
I love all these stories of kind of how the UK is such a fantastic destination. And we share quite a lot of things on our Be Inspired page on our website. And Maggie and I have picked a couple of favourite posts each. And the first one is actually about me. Sorry, everyone. Because 10 years ago now, I cycled around the coast of Britain as my adventure of a lifetime. And I did it because I didn't want to get on a plane, but also because I wanted to demonstrate that the UK is as much a destination of a lifetime as any other destination in the world. So yeah, that story is on our Be Inspired page of our website. And I also want to share Gopi Walker. He's a triathlete and he used to fly all the time to go cycling in hot locations, Lanzarote, Mallorca, the south of Spain. And he then took the flight free pledge in 2020. He said, I've been to Mallorca 11 times and I've never been to Cornwall. And since he's taken the pledge, he has now discovered all these incredible places in the UK and especially in the Lake District in Wales. He is loving the cycling around those parts. And he says, even though the roads aren't quite as good and the weather's a bit more unpredictable, the lakes and the mountains in the UK are as beautiful as anywhere in the world. I think that's great.
Yeah, I wanted to pick a couple of my favourites. Alistair Humphreys is a round-the-world adventurer. And he spent a month cycling around Yorkshire, which is his home county. And he's a great example, Kat, of what you're saying about when you slow down and travel more mindfully, you discover and perceive so much more. So he did find that travelling even in his home county, there were many places that he hadn't visited or hadn't looked at properly, you know, hadn't looked at carefully. So his month travelling around Yorkshire turned into a real adventure. And another one, we have a post in the Be Inspired section on Destination Scotland, and it goes into talking about exploring Scotland by public transport, which can obviously lots of people when they holiday in the UK take the car, and that's fine. The travelling by public transport can be a real eye-opener. The time you spend waiting at stations and bus stops and encountering local people or having time to watch the birds or something can be really enhancing to the holiday. But it can be a bit daunting as well. So it's reassuring to see someone else manage it. You don't know how the trains are going to connect to the buses and the ferries, and you worry about if you're going to get on the wrong bus or miss the ferry. It's reassuring to know that it can be done.
Yeah, it is. And I guess that's where we're actually really surprised by the huge surge in appetite for us to have WhatsApp groups. You know, it was really surprising because I obviously setting up this company, you know, a year and 3 months ago, it's not very long ago. And we actually were only able to run our first trips in July of last year because we were in lockdown for the first 3 months of our lives, of our life. And I set up the WhatsApp groups originally purely for product feedback. You know, I wanted to know when we sent people on these holidays, what did they love? What did they not? Where did we need to improve? Where did we need to do better? So I was just essentially on WhatsApp with our customers saying, how's it going? You're having a lovely time. And I didn't really expect that to be any more than product discovery. But actually we found then as people came home where the 5-star reviews were mentioning what was great about it, it was consistently the WhatsApp support that said, we're there, we're listening to you. You can ping us if you've got a question, but we can also give you kind of proactive heads up. If your train's running a bit late, then actually go and do this instead and then get this train and, you know, blah, blah, blah. All of that stuff the realization that there is just naturally more unpredictability. You're not just getting one plane, you're getting potentially 3 or 4 different connecting journeys, and the idea that you can embrace the uncertainty of those journeys, and there's part of the energy of the trip and the enjoyment of the trip and the stories that you tell when you get home.
It does make it much more of an adventure, doesn't it? So at Flight Free UK, we're all about not flying doesn't mean not traveling, and we want to paint a positive picture of what tourism would be like in the future with less flying. What do you think about the future of travel, and what sort of businesses do you think will thrive in a low carbon future?
Well, that's easy. I think the future of travel is slow travel. I think there's a huge shift in kind of consumer consciousness around sustainability, but also around a slightly more mindful approach and more exploratory and adventurous, all of that kind of coming out of the pandemic as well. So I think that we're going to be seeing a whole lot more slow trips being taken. And also in our experience, a lot of people, we've kind of come to us once to say, I can't go abroad, so let's try doing something in the UK a bit differently, who are now coming back for their second and third trips and sending their friends and going, God, I'd never thought of traveling like this. But actually, it was really freeing, interesting experience. And I want to start to do more of it. So I think that's my bet, is we're going to see a lot more slow travel. We're going to see a lot more grounded kind of train rides and boat trips and all of that sort of stuff. So I think that there are businesses that will do well when they start to plug into that.
Should we move on to destination of the month?
Destination of the month.
So naturally, destination of the month this time is going to be about our favourite UK byways, in honour of Kat. So Maggie, what would be your favourite byway in the UK?
So my favourite is a footpath called the Saints Way, which is in Cornwall. And Cornwall isn't exactly off the beaten track, is it? It's very, very popular and with good reason. But most people, when they go to Cornwall, go to the coast. And this is, well, I'm saying, forget the coast, forget the Southwest Coastal Path. Take the shortcut across the middle from Padstow to Foy. You start in Padstow and you walk south. And for the first part, you're walking through wooded valleys and then up onto the downs. And then you stop overnight right in the middle of Cornwall. And on the second day, you walk through the ancient woodlands with moss-covered trees and stone stiles. And it's just fantastic. And it's really very quiet and a great variety of landscapes as well.
Oh, sounds wonderful. Wonderful way to get away from those crowds. And Kat, what do you have as a recommendation for a byway destination of the month?
One of my favourites, and again, this goes to my annual holiday down to Studland Bay area, to a place called Dancing Ledge. So it's a ledge of rock where I think a local school, maybe 60, 80 years ago, went and blasted a swimming pool out into the rock. The schools came together to say, we need a swimming pool for the children. And the sea is not safe to swim in on that seaside of the ledge. But at low tide, there's this amazing tidal pool, which just fills itself up when the sea comes in and then the sea goes out. And you can swim and you can, you know, scramble around the rocks there. It's a bit of a scramble up from Dancing Ledge. But the swim and the views and the experience of being there, you know, it's always quiet. And then the little byway that takes you up through fields and past cow pasture in the right season. And there's kind of a scrambly bit, which I love, kind of the sense that, like, you can do it without knowing how to climb, but it's kind of borderline. It's a good scramble. And then you're up onto this amazing, you cover a huge amount of height. You've got these gorgeous views out across the sea on one side and up across fields and hedgerows, and then you kind of wending your way through fields, and it's nice because it's not woody, so you can see for such a long way. And you finish up at a pub called the Square and Compass, which is there's usually a dog that lies on the roof of the pub, and you can get a pie and a pint after your walk and your swim and just sit and enjoy the landscape and the quiet, and it's just gorgeous.
Sounds idyllic. I'm going to balance this out slightly by picking something. So you've both had South Coast byways, so I'm going to pick one right on the very top of Scotland. So this is Cape Wrath, which is very, very remote. There's no road access there. You can only access it by boat. So it's kind of the peninsula that's right on the top left-hand corner of Scotland, right in the kind of wilderness of the Western Mountains. And you take a boat across the Kyle of Durness. Yeah, there's a ferryman who takes people across. And then there's a minibus that takes people up to the lighthouse at the very tip of Cape Wrath, which, if you want to take the minibus, then go ahead. But when I went there, I rode my bike. It's quite a trek because it's very bad paving, but it's a very bumpy ride, but a very exciting one. And it's so wild. And when you get to the top, there's a small visitor area and the lighthouse, and then the next thing is Canada across the sea. So it's kind of, it feels very wild and very windswept and wonderful. So that's pretty much all we've got time for today in our podcast. So we want to say thank you so much to Kat for sharing the stories from your experience and from all the things that you can offer with Byway. It sounds absolutely fantastic. And I really hope that it does enable more people to experience the wonderful travels that there are to be had here in the UK, and not be daunted by any of the organisational aspects of it. So we really wish you lots of success with your venture, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, thank you, Kat.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been lovely, fun chat.
So thanks.
And next month, we are going to be talking about the pandemic and the effect of the pandemic on our campaign and on travel and on our relationship with nature.
So join us again next time. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for your company at this Flight Free podcast episode. We hope you enjoyed the journey. You can find out more about the campaign at our website, flightfree.co.uk, or find us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Flight Free UK. Until next time, stay grounded.